Hello.
So I think we should probably get started. First, Happy New Year and welcome to the first FCCLLP meeting of the year. I just got two slides of news, so we can do this quickly and then get to our two presentations today. So I just thought to repeat one of the slides from Pat and Emanuele from the one of the last physics and performance meetings of last year about the midterm report. So the full report has gone through the editorial process in October, and then there's also the executive summary of 45 pages, and they've been reviewed by the relevant committees, and they will transmit their conclusions to the CERN Council, and then the next council meeting is February 2nd. So we will hear back from the council after that. And then this shows you the timeline for the feasibility, the final feasibility study report in 2025, environmental assessment, and so on. So just to let you know about that. And then some upcoming events. Well, first today we will hear from Thomas on HNLs and Sophia on specifically neutrino oscillation. And then I don't know if there will be. I've got a couple of conflicts for the rest of January before the Annecy meeting. So I think probably the next time we can actually meet will be the week before the workshop in Annecy. And thank you all for those who have filled the poll. Judging from the poll, it's pretty clear that the slot that's available is January 22nd. At noon CERN time. So I can send an email about this as well, and I can draft an agenda, but it would be good to meet one more time before Annecy. I'd like to practice my talk in front of you all, and if anyone else wants to practice their talk or any other urgent business before Annecy, let me know. As far as I know, the next physics and performance meeting will be January 22nd, or at least that's what they said at the end of December, and they were going to confirm it. Also, given that Annecy is the right after, maybe it's not necessary. So here's the link to the Annecy workshop, and I know that a number of us have talks, plenary or parallel talks. That should be interesting. And looking forward to seeing some of you there. So maybe it's not super relevant for this crowd, but in terms of the FCC USA meeting will be at MIT in March. I don't know how many people we have from the US here, but there's also was recently announced that there's an FCC Italy France workshop in November later this year. So mark your calendars for that if you are working in Italy or France or otherwise connected to those countries. And then the full FCC week will be in San Francisco in June. And that's basically all I have. Any general questions?
Just a comment. There will be also a talk by Nicolò.
Ah, great. I will edit the slides and add him to the list.
Yep, thanks.
Great. Okay, if nothing else, then I will stop sharing. And who's up first? Sophia?
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Would you like to share your screen?
Yeah. You see it?
Yes.
Okay, so hello everybody. With this talk, I want to discuss my master thesis project that I worked on last year that titled Heavy Neutral Lepton Search in a Realistic Neutrino Oscillation Model at FCC-EE. So I'm going to introduce the model that we used and explain in detail all the simulation and analysis we did. to conclude with a discussion on the results. So far, for neutrino mass generation model, the type 1 system mechanism has been extensively studied, even at FCCE. But so far, studies include only one heavy neutral lepton. But instead, by considering at least two heavy neutral leptons, we can give an answer to the open problems of the standard models that are the flavor oscillation of neutrino, the baryon asymmetry of the universe, and the nature of dark matter. So in this model, we have a few free parameters. And in particular, we have the masses of the HNLs and also the matrix that mixes the lepton flavors with the HNLs flavors. So given how interesting it is to study this model from a physics point of view, we considered how two HNLs could be produced at FCCE. From theoretical studies, it was found that FCCE between all the proposed colliders is the best one for this type of searches, as it will study the parameter space for the type 1 system model where there is enough baryogenesis production. And it will also explore the space where other collider and experiment cannot access. So in particular, we consider the production of the two HNLs in pair with light neutrinos at energy of the Z boson. And we study the response of the idea detector. We chose to study only the lepton decay channel of the HNLs. So our final state is given by two leptons that we taken to be either electron or muons and two neutrinos or antineutrinos. So the simulation was done on 50,000 events for each parameter combination for the signal in MedGraph. We used the AVN model to parameterize the type 1 system mechanism. And we also used PTA to then hadronize the initial and final states of the process. For the detector simulation, we use Delphis with the latest available IDEA card, where we taken the JET algorithm to give us events with zero JETs. The events have been then normalized to the cross-section of the process, the efficiency of the process, and the integrated luminosity of STC of 150 Atoban inverse. The analysis was done in ROOT. For the parameter space, we have a lot of free parameters, but thankfully in type 1 system model, there is a symmetry that considers degenerate HNLs in pairs. And this will reduce considerably the number of free parameters and also enhance the cross-section and the production of baryogenesis. This symmetry still holds true even considering a small mass splitting between the HNLs. And this is the case that we consider given then the HNLs are Majorana particles. So they have processes that both conserve and violate the total lepton number. So for the specific parameters that we studied, we consider a scan on the on one of the masses of the HNLs, taking values from 5 to 70 GeVs. And we consider the mass splitting to be equal to 10 to the minus 5 GeV. And that is because we have studied the cross section by varying both the mass splitting and the against the mixing and total mixing angle and masses of the HNLs, and we found this value to be the best to enhance the cross section. For the mixing matrix, instead, we consider initially the unitary condition that relates the mixing angles. And then we've taken the mixing angles of tau to be zero, since we're not studying this decay. So we're left only with the electron and muon mixing angle that we have considered from the unitary condition to set initially the electron mixing angle with values from 10 to the minus 4 to 10 to the minus 6. And the muon angle is then calculated considering ratios between the two angles that are compatible with oscillation data. We are not specifically taking the correct flavor of the angles consistent with oscillation data at this point, but the decay within the detector volume. Of course, to have a complete analysis of the situation of the R model, we also consider standard model processes that will be reconstructed in the detector with the same final state as our signal. So we consider mainly the decays of the Z boson, but leptonic and hadronic ones that we simulated with the same software that we use for the signals. In this case, we simulated at least 1 million events for each process, since we need a higher number of events to be properly reconstructed. So in terms of the analysis from the detector output, we studied different variables, especially considering the leptons. So for the leading lepton, we studied the transverse momentum and impact parameter, while for the lepton system, we studied the invariant mass, angular distance, and cosine. We also studied the total missing energy of the event, since we, for the signal, we have the in the final state two neutrinos that are not reconstructed in the event. And we can already see how some of the variables are more interesting in our cases. They can differentiate between different signal hypotheses. And especially we see how the invariant mass is distributed up to the mass of the HNL decaying. So as I said before, the HNL that we consider are Majorana particles. So we can distinguish between processes that conserve the lepton number, and those have one neutrino and one antineutrino in the final state, while processes that violate the lepton number have two neutrinos or two antineutrinos. So we studied on a selected number of signals this difference. And we saw that, especially for the lighter HNLs, there is a small difference between the two cases. That is especially relevant for the cosine between the leptons. Although for our final analysis, we saw that this difference is still not significant for our study, so we didn't develop this further. Instead, we consider to differentiate our processes by considering the flavor of the leptons. So we consider the case where we have same flavor of leptons, so two electron or muons, and also the case where the flavor is different, so we have one electron and one muon. And this is particularly relevant for distinguishing the background's hypothesis. So the selection, of course, requires both the signal and backgrounds to be reconstructed in the detector with the presence of two leptons, no photons or jets. And we also selected events with invariant mass between 15 and 70 GeVs. In this way, we we excluded all the background events that are distributed in the region where we don't have signal events. And we also excluded the Z2 Woody and S quarks, which is reconstructed very poorly. Of course, in this way, we lost the 5 and 10 GeV signal. But of course, this is not a big problem as we are considering different signal hypotheses. So our final analysis consider the evaluation of the significance of our signal against the background. And we use the CMS tool combine to evaluate the significance in a shape-based analysis. So it considers the distribution of signal and background events in each bin of the variables that we analyzed before. In particular, we found that there is a nice high significance region when studying the angular the angular variables, and especially the different flavor case. So considering the final state to be one electron and one muon is more relevant, as the backgrounds are lower than the same flavor case. And so we have found a region with masses between 20 and 60 GeVs and the mixing angle of the order of 10 to the minus 4 to have high significance so that the signal hypothesis can be distinguished from the background hypothesis. The analysis, of course, consider systematic uncertainty on the cross section and also statistical uncertainty on the number of events, which both depend on the simulation that we did. So finally, we compared our results with the study that considered the decay of one HNL into two electron and one neutrino. And to compare these two cases, we only selected a signal with equal electron and muon angles, so that the decay into muons could be compared to the one to electrons. In this case, the significance comes from a figure of merit that takes in the number of signal and background events after the selection. And we have found the same trend of our study compared to the one previously done, and also the same region of higher significance that is also correspondent to the one that we found in the shape-based analysis. Of course, with values way lower, given the fact that this is an analysis based on the whole number of events. And so we can conclude that considering two HNLs at FCCE still is very interesting, given the fact that it's a more realistic model, as it can explain various problem of the standard model, and it's also able to reproduce the study that have been done so far. So in conclusion, FCC is again able to possibly see events of HNLs in the parameter space that is available. Of course, this study is not complete and could be extended to all the other HNL decay channels. And also it could be improved by having a better background reconstruction that could influence the selection applied to have even higher significance. Our plans for this study is to continue by reproducing the results in the FCC software, and also using the Winter 23 production for the background simulation, so that we could have improved background reconstruction. And in this sense, we also plan to extend the analysis to include the tau mixing, which will mean that we could take in the ratio compatible with the oscillation data. And in this way, a more comprehensive publication could be made that would be even more realistic in the physics case. And of course, in this sense, any advice and idea is welcome from you. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Sophia. This is great to see. And then you said this is for your master's thesis. So then congrats on getting your master's.
Thank you.
So questions for Sophia? Or comments, of course. Well, maybe while people think, I can have one. So what was I going to ask? So on slide 16, so you're getting actually pretty similar results to what we got before for the for snowmass. Is that you concluded the same, right? They're kind of on par, actually. That's cool.
It's not exactly the same, mostly because, you know, muons instead of electron, and also a different selection, but it's pretty similar, yeah.
Cool. I mean, I would not assume that it would necessarily definitely line up. So that's interesting. Did you also find that, I mean, for us, when we were doing this, we included a delta B in the significance calculation, because, or this taking this figure of merit, because we didn't really have a lot of background events, and so we got down to like zero events after all of our cuts. But of course, we know it's not exactly zero. There was a huge uncertainty on that zero. So were you also running out of background events, and would you need a larger sample than what you had?
No, we still had a lot of background events, and that's because we only really cut on the Enviant mass, so a lot of events were still there.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for your patience and reiterating your cuts for me. Okay, interesting. Matteo.
Yeah, if I can add the thing that we did is exactly the opposite, because we were running out of statistics when simulating events. So we looked into a region where we could cover, and if you go up, I think to slide 15, probably, but we see the histograms that we fed into combine. I don't see slides. Yeah, okay. Also, this one is okay. We try to, you know, take as inputs to combine the ones in which we have for like missing backgrounds, so the ones that were not simulating that were covered by the statistical uncertainty by the most populated ones, in order to be, you know, to trust our statistical machinery, let's say. But the target now is to include much higher statistics of the backgrounds to see what comes out, if they're differs or not. But yeah, the machinery is all in place, so it should be, I think, pretty straightforward.
Okay, great. Other questions?
Sorry, I think two quick questions to this presentation. First of all, very nice presentation, Sophia. And the first one is concerning the systematic uncertainties, as Matteo said. So for this, we are considering only systematic uncertainty from the cross section and statistical. We are not applying any fixed uncertainty, for example, 20% or something, right?
No, that's only the uncertainty that we considered. So we haven't considered systematic uncertainty, like on the luminosity or things like that.
Okay. And the second question, I think it's on the plots of slide 10 or 12 or something, regarding the missing energy. You're referring as a total missing energy, but it is not the transverse missing energy as you have on the label on the x-axis, right? It is the total missing energy.
Yeah, it's the total.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right, Winnie.
Okay, so just to understand what exactly is used here. Okay, thank you.
I have another question, Giacomo. In slide 16, what kind of assumptions you do on the mixes? What does mean log U2, E1, 2?
So, for the comparison, we only took the signal with equal electron and mix, muon mixing angle, and plotted it's only the value of the logarithm of the electron mixing angle.
So you have both electron and muon, it's only the electron, okay.
Yeah, that's this label is only for the comparison of the plots.
Which kills you half of this. Half of the cross section, right? Half of the branching fraction.
No, the signal consider both electron and muons. So it's only a selection of the various signal hypotheses that we considered.
Okay. In this case, is the with the two equal, and I can see it's like what we are doing in Atlas for LN. Yes. Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Maybe a practical one on your next steps. So if this is your master's thesis, but you also say that you plan to use the FCC software and the Winter 23 samples, will you continue that, or someone else working with Matteo, or what's the plan?
I will be continuing it. Yeah,
you will. Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, she will be a PhD student in Karlsruhe, so she will start with our group. Yeah.
Okay, so then also working on CMS for your PhD as well.
No, I think so at some point. Yes, yeah. She will start with FCC mainly. And yeah. That's the idea. That the first target will be to complete this part and then develop other things related.
Cool. Great.
Actually, just I would, since you said that now you started with the winter 2023, something I discovered recently, which I would like to share. I don't know if the Geneva colleagues have got the same problem, is that I've been producing after the, during the holidays, some samples, and the format of Key4Hype has changed significantly with respect to what we have in the enterprise, which means one has to change the, one has a different filtering program. Probably this is the physics is the same, but one has to has a, use a rather different filtering program for the two cases. Has anybody else seen this kind of problem? No, nobody. Of course, if nobody has produced Giacomo? Anything after the first of December, that's probably still okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
Giacomo, this is Patrizia. Si. So I don't know the details of your specific version, but it is known that there was supposed to be an evolution in the data model because we need to accommodate stuff for the full simulation of the detectors. So I'm not incredibly surprised. I wasn't really working during the vacation, so I haven't checked yet. Now I think we will get up to speed by the ANC workshop, and this will be certainly discussed. But last time that I was discussing with the software people, there was this mention of evolution. I think also in Bologna, this was mentioned of the evolution of the data model. So now we need to see how to deal with that.
Yeah, probably there would be some validation. To
yeah, understand. There is possibly, as you know, there was a recipe so that you would be able to use exactly the same Key4Hype release when you produce stuff.
Well, I tried to, but apart from the fact that it doesn't appear really written, it appears when you start running the program and then it disappears from your screen. And but I went into, when he told me, now you're running these releases, so in order to reproduce that, you should do this. I went in the directory to see if there were any previous releases left over, which I could use to reproduce in winter 2023, and there were none.
Okay, so this really sounds something that we should discuss with the technical forum, of course.
I just share this because yes. In case, since people are starting now probably generating samples, they might end up in trouble, just to tell them that, okay.
Yes, no, absolutely. This is an excellent point, and we don't know until someone tries. So this is very good to know that, you know, it mostly affects the documentation and the information that we pass. But of course, it's great that you're sharing. Actually, I suggest that you send a mail around, maybe just write to the forum as well, so that maybe if other people have the same problem, they would know.
Yeah, on the other hand, it took me one day to get something which looked identical, so I hope for it.
Sorry, can I ask a question? One more question regarding the samples that you're using. You're not using the cards used for the Winter 23 to produce these samples, right?
The cards produced by
the Winter 2023.
Yes, I'm using the Winter 2023.
No. Just in this presentation for Sophia.
Sorry.
No, actually, we used, I think they're very similar, but the Delphi release is a little bit newer. I think in the winter 20, it's pre-05, but the card should be pretty much the same, and also the PTL card is very similar, if not completely equal.
So we don't expect a lot of discrepancies between this and the official cards, right?
No.
Mm. Okay.
Okay, great. Well, I'm conscious of the time, so thank you, Sophia, and we should move on to the next presentation from Thomas.
Hello.
Hello.
I will just share my screen quickly. Can you see it?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So I haven't been introduced to most of you. So I'm Tom, and I'm a master's student at the University of Geneva. And I'm working with Anna and Pantelis to investigate HNLs in the electron digest channel at the FCC. So just as an introduction, I mean, Sophia did a great job there summarizing a lot of the sort of foundational theory, etc. So I won't repeat too much of what was said. But just to say, this analysis is based on the IDEA detector design. And essentially, what we're trying to do is look in the Z channel to see how we can restrict the parameter space for our HNL models, which you can see on the right. And over the runtime, we'll expect about 150 inverse Atoban of luminosity in the Z channel. And essentially, what we're going to have is this electron-positron electroweak factory, which will allow us to make a new generation of precision measurements. And what we're focused on here is the exciting possibilities for BSM, obviously including HNLs. So as I mentioned, we're going to be searching in the electron digest channel. So our pre-selection requirements for this analysis are one final state electron, one final state neutrino, and exactly two jets. And you can see the Feynman diagrams on the right show a description of this process in the lepton number conservation channel. So for the sake of all the analysis we'll see here, we're actually looking at Dirac type particles rather than the Majorana. And the Monte Carlo generated samples come from the winter 2023 campaign. And then as before, the detector and hadronization simulation come from Pythia and Delphs. And then we've done all the analysis within the FCC analysis framework. So throughout this presentation, I'm just going to start with a brief description of the cut and count analysis that I'm sure you might be familiar with from Dimitri's work last year, and then move on to some of the new stuff we've been trying to do in the last semester. So as part of the signal and background processes, as is typical, we've generated the HNL samples using MadGraph. For the sake of the cut and count analysis, we focused mostly on the discriminating variables as they appear through looking at the 20, 50, and 70 GeV HNL mass points with the mixing angle squared of 10 to the minus 6, and obviously using the cross sections which MadGraph gives you. And then the centrally produced background processes that we focus on are the Z to BB and the Z to CC. And then we locally generate this four body background, which mimics the signal process with the same final state, which you can also see here on the left-hand Feynman diagram, which is just one example of how the Z to tau tau can produce the four body final state. We emit things like the Z to EE due to the pre-selection criteria of requiring one final state electron. So an example of one of the discriminating variables that we look at in both the cut and count and future analyses is the lead electron energy. So the chosen cut from this plot that you see on the left was that the lead electron energy must be greater than 35 giga electron volts. And the significance that you see in the lower plot is calculated as per this Atlas note, where we have some uncertainty on the background, which we take as 10%. And we look at these distributions to see where is the optimal cut. This is the distribution. This wasn't the first cut made. So 35 GV, in fact, is more around the peak than it appears here, because this is made after you take the cut on the missing energy for the neutrino. So this is just one example of one of the variables we'll look at. And as a summary of the cut and count, these are the four variables we look at. We look at the missing energy, the leading electron energy, the 3D digest angle, and the digest delta R. And after making all cuts, we can see on the right here a distribution of the invariant mass, so the digest mass, versus the background signal. So the line in dashed blue gives you the expected background, and the black will give you the expected background plus signal. So we see three distinct mass points here at 20, 50, and 70 GeV. With a decreasing significance, which obviously implies that our cuts are preferentially oriented towards the lower mass points. And we can see in this table in the bottom left here, a sort of unnormalized cut flow. So based on the raw number of events generated, both in the Monte Carlo and locally, how many survive each event. So we have incredibly effective cuts against the Z to BB and CC backgrounds, but quite limited in the range of trying to restrict the forebody since it so closely mimics our final state. And it's worth saying here on this plot on the right, as opposed to the cumulative significance we saw in the previous plot, this is just the peak bin by bin significance calculation. So using this cut and count method then, we can see on the right here a plot for the parameter space for the HNLs. So we have the log of the mixing angle and the mass, and we're looking in the range of 10 to 80 GV with the mixing angle of 10 to the 2 to 10 to the 5. One thing that is worth noting is all of these plots are normalized to a luminosity of 10 inverse femtobarm, mostly due to the restrictions in the statistics we have to make commentary about the full luminosity, whereas we do have the statistics to talk about this. So this is at 10 femtobarm, we see the 2 sigma and 5 sigma delimination on the parameter space. But it does certainly allude to the fact that we might need more statistics. So something that we've been working on following on from this cut and count is machine learning. So a problem like this, a binary classification problem, perfectly lends itself to the use of tools like XGBoost, which is optimized to use with things like TVMA and Root. So it can be really broken down into 3 stages: data preparation, training, and testing. So in the data preparation, we define some filter. And in the case of the results we'll show after this, the filter in this case was that the lead electron energy must be greater than 30 GV. So initially we tried things with something like 35 GV, but that was quite a restricting, discriminating variable. So you go from your 500 million events to something like 10,000 events in the BB. So it's a very effective filter, but it doesn't help the machine learning model learn as effectively. So we found so far that if we're a bit more lenient on that filter, then we can increase the visibility of the parameter space. And we then feed into the data preparation our stage 1 flattened tuples from the analysis, and we split to training and validation. So currently, the results we'll show have a training validation split in the background of 1/3, and in the testing, it's a 50-50, in the signal, it's a 50-50 split. And then in terms of the model working, XGBoost stands for Extreme Gradient Boosted Decision Trees. So it takes an ensemble of weak learning decision trees and combines them to minimize the loss function. And obviously you can specify your hyperparameters like any other type of machine learning. And then you feed it labeled data where it tries to generate a model that you then test on unseen data. And it tries to most accurately describe the difference between the signal and the background. So you get, in principle, a peak at 0 for the background and a peak of 1. For the signal. And then you can compare your predictions to the truth labels to see how well your model is performing. So one thing that's been really important over the course of trying to understand the machine learning data frame has been the feature engineering. So it's very important to understand pretty well how the variables you're feeding your machine learning algorithm are working. So in the instance where you feed your model to exactly correlated or anti-correlated or essentially the same variable twice, it can learn erroneous patterns. So something you have to be really careful about in the case of something like XGBoost is this tendency to overfit. So we have to understand the variables very well. And on the left here, we see some correlation matrix, which describes the angles we initially fed into the model and how they were related. So this was useful to see for a number of reasons, one of which is that I had this exactly correlated variable here on the sort of bottom left, which was just the same variable twice that I'd named two different things for some reason. So it was good in the case of getting things like that removed. And then some other decisions to be made are, for example, keeping the digit delta R plus the digit angle, even though we can see they have quite a strong correlation score, which we would expect. And the digit delta R and the missing energy being quite strongly negatively correlated, which again makes sense, but for now we've kept both of those inside of the model. So these are just some spaces that we can continue to improve our results on by testing what happens if we remove these variables, etc. And then on the right hand side, we see these so-called feature importance plots alongside the features that we're currently feeding into our model. So we can see in all cases at the 3 mass points that we considered for the cut and count, it's the missing energy that is the most often used to split the decision trees. So this F score is basically an indication of how much the model relied on that feature in order to learn. And then after that, you have some more variation, but you have often the same sort of offenders, the lead electron energy, the delta phi, all these kind of things are commonly used. But this missing energy is in every plot I've seen for the feature important, the most important. So that's a good indication of how our model is learning. And so the first big result we've got is the improvement of the parameter space. Again, integrated luminosity of 10 inverse femtobarn rather than the 150 attobarn. But we see here the red line representing the 2 sigma delimination from the cut and count versus the pink line delimiting the 2 sigma from our BDT. So the main thing I think that's worth noting is the massive improvement at these high mass points. We spoke earlier about how after the cut and count, you see at these higher mass points, the significant drops off, whereas it seems that training a model for each mass point allows it to learn the different kinematic signatures that you'd see at the high mass points and therefore form a much better discrimination at this higher masses. So overall, we see if you're parameterizing it about a 10% improvement in the exclusion area on the phase space. One thing that is worth noting is an issue that we've had persisting is around these very low cross-section points. Generating the samples has been incredibly difficult. I think at several points it crashed my computer and just never finished sort of thing. So it's definitely worth trying to get these mass points. I remember that Pantelis and I spoke about some issues Dimitri also had, not with exactly the same points, but at these very small cross-sections, trying to generate the points can be quite difficult. And one of the most exciting things I think about this plot is that we're still pretty much in the infancy of trying to understand fully the variables that we want to input. So there's much better, there's much of improvement to be had with including something like the D0 impact parameter. So something we did use was the D0 impact parameter significance, but including the D0 impact parameter could have a big impact so long as they're not too closely correlated, which you might expect them to be. And then also, Pantelis and Anna pointed me in the direction of some vertex-based variables, like the chi-squared of the primary vertex described by Giacomo in the presentation I've linked there. So it's just important to say this isn't a final result, but it definitely is a big indication of the direction in which we can go by using these machine learning techniques as opposed to the conventional cut and count. So just to sort of summarize the next steps and the ongoing investigations, I think something clear, especially from the 10 femtobarn normalization, is that we do need much higher statistics in our Monte Carlo events before we're able to make much commentary about the full luminosity. So in the plot here, we can see sort of the number of events with no normalization versus 150 attobarn and with no cuts versus all the cuts. So with no normalization, we have 1 event surviving the BB and 2 events surviving the CC. But if you normalize these to the 150 attobarns, you're expecting more like 2,000 or 3,000, as opposed to the mass points in the forebody, which are locally generated, where they're at least of the same order of magnitude. It's very difficult to make commentary without huge uncertainties for these centrally generated events. So definitely something we're going to be working on, and Anna, Pantelis and I have spoken about, is this need for a global filter that viably allows us to make better commentary on the full luminosity. And then, as we also spoke about, the introduction of these new variables to introduce to the BDT in order to maximize the sensitivity. That's definitely where the next step of this is just sort of really pushing to try and see as much of that phase space as we can with highest significance. And then moving on from that, the next natural stage would be to try and perform some optimization with a deep neural network and compare how we get an output versus the BDT. So there's definitely several interesting tasks ahead. And it should be really exciting to see what happens over the next semester. So thanks very much for listening. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Tom. This is looking cool. And I think there's been really very little so far in at least LLP FCC land involving machine learning. So this is great to see that you're taking steps in this direction. So questions, comments? I could ask one on slide 6. sorry, it's maybe a little bit before you took over, but I was curious about this plot on slide six. So you showed you pointed out the signal peaks, but there's other peaks like, what is that, 55 GeV and 65-ish? Do you know what these are? It's coming from the background.
I think that's just having very low statistics. I think it's just pure statistics in the background because we've got one and two events for the BBNCC normalized then to the 10th event demand. So it's just statistical fluctuations, which is why, especially at this high mass point, it's so hard to get good significance because there's such high statistical fluctuations.
Okay. Yeah. That sucks. Okay.
Yeah.
Other questions? I can ask a practical one, maybe. You said you're working this semester as well, so you will finish up your master's thesis in May-ish, or?
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure Anna has a better idea, but I think it's you defend in June, something like that. So
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Thumbs up for Minna. Got it. Other questions? Does your plan include maybe making a publication, a paper?
We haven't really spoken about that, so I think possibly Pantelis or Anna would be better to answer that, but I guess it depends where the results go. It seems pretty interesting so far, so.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see how much we can increase this sensitivity with additional variables and DNN. And if we are in time, then yes, we can just pursue a paper or something. Yes, but I think it's somehow early for now in order to discuss this. But of course, yes, just to say that, we're going to attend the FCC workshop in Nancy in person, I and Tom. Just saying, so probably, yeah, but I think it is very early to have a specific talk about this, so yes, it will be good to, yes, to have if this will be included inside the main HNL talk, this will be fantastic, but I think yes, it is somehow early to have a specific talk on this analysis specifically.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I can cover these results in like a slide or two in my talk for Annecy.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing regarding the filter. I think it is a good time to discuss this, right? Because more and more analyses need this filter, more statistics actually. And I'm not sure if we can discuss probably the thresholds or specific variables or something that we can just pursue for the main production of a new campaign or something. But I think it is necessary for now on.
Okay. Do you have a proposal for where to cut?
Well, we have some, selections for our analysis, but of course we have to discuss with the other analysis in order to have this as global as it's possible. So I don't know if, I don't know if is there anything else that for the other analysis that we can discuss, for example, Giacomo or Niccolo or other, if there is something in mind in order to include some very fresh pre-selection cuts for the filter. But I don't remember the cuts by heart now, but probably we could just have a dedicated meeting for this. Just saying, I was trying to understand how to proceed with this, to be honest.
Well, I think there is work which is being done at present by Saha in order to try to get some very general backgrounds, essentially focused at present, as far as I've been following, about having before writing out events, filtering out, for instance, all the hadronic events, the one which have a lepton in the final state, which alone would give us a significant factor. So I think this is ongoing. I think it's Saha who has been sitting actually with the software expert trying to do this work actually.
Yeah. Actually, it's good to know that. Unfortunately, Saha is not there now to discuss, but okay, we can discuss on an upcoming meeting. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. If you like analysis-oriented cuts, of course, that's a bit more tricky, because given the level of the investment, particularly in any case, what Sa is doing is very important, because the problem is that we have to have something which can be filtered before we write on tape, because the bottleneck is the size of the samples, which means that it has to happen either what we are looking at now is happening before Delphes, happening in Pythia. And this, of course, means that doing explicit analysis cuts, is a tricky exercise at this level. Of course, since we don't have fakes, clearly asking, for instance, exactly that inside the hadronic jet there is a lepton, this is safe, which is the first thing we are trying to look at. If we are, for instance, another thing I could think of doing is, for instance, for our specific samples, putting a lower limit on the emiss. Typically is useful up to the very highest heavy neutrino masses. The emiss is a fixed line at a number which is 15 GeV. So that would, for instance, would be a very strong number. But we could discuss this actually by ourselves and then in a more generic framework.
Anna?
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to say that actually from this page, it seems that the electron energy could be some loose cut on electron energy could potentially be a generic cut for it's a reduction of factor of 10, right? But it means that you get 10 times more statistics. So this is...
Well, emiss is, of course, is the... Is a specular tweet, of course.
Sorry, I didn't understand, Giacomo, what you said. I didn't hear well.
No, the problem is not about the electron energy, clearly, but it depends also a bit in which decay you have. We can study.
Of course, obviously, yes, indeed.
So that's why one was trying to look a bit. Emiss is independent of the decay, for instance. Well, not really.
Okay, yes, I meant to say like lepton energy. So in this case, it could be either electron or muon, for instance.
No, I meant that. Yeah, we have to look at it in software. Emiss. As I say, apologies actually for emiss, I was making the same mistake. If you don't have a second neutrino, emiss is a line. If you have two neutrinos, like in the case of the people who are working with two leptons, for instance, you are getting trouble. That's why I was, but at least suggesting emiss. For the case where that's something which really is a line.
Yes, and basically the key somehow question from our side was whether there were people working on
the software to actually implement this kind of selections at Pythia levels, or I mean, before entuple making, so basically at generator level. And from what I understand from what you said, Sarah is already doing that.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So then we should have a dedicated discussion at some point to what cuts indeed should be applied.
No. Okay. And I know Sarah is very keen on that. She's pushing this exercise. So this is happening. Okay.
That's great.
But I think at some point she will be technically proficient enough that we can sit together with her and try to decide together a recipe that she can try out in the software she learned.
Sounds good.
Okay, but maybe we should organize a meeting. I mean, since there is not going to be any LLP meeting in the coming month, maybe there could be a dedicated discussion on that topic instead.
Yes. That's, I can. We can ask Sarah what is the status and when she would she be comfortable to discuss this.
Thanks.
Yeah. Sounds good. Okay. Well, it's a bit after 2 p.m. So thanks, everyone. This is an interesting meeting and lots to discuss. And see you at least on January 22nd, if not, at some other point. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.